This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. More than 10,000 caves are known to lie beneath the surface here in Tennessee, and thousands more can be found in the states that surround us. Michael Ray Taylor tells that story in his book, Hidden Nature, Wild Southern Caves. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Ray.
Hidden Nature. In the prologue, you write about your first cave experience through Ruby Falls near Chattanooga.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little more about that.
Well, I grew up in Florida along the East Coast, which was a nice place to live right next to the Atlantic Ocean, but it was very flat. There was no real geology to speak of. And when I was a child, we would take these family vacations to go visit relatives in Illinois and Missouri. And so we would drive through Tennessee. And this was my first experience of mountains. And the mountains themselves seemed magical to me. But I learned to read at an early age. And one of the things I enjoyed reading was billboards and barn signs throughout Tennessee that said things like, see Ruby Falls, see Rock City, see the Wonder Cave. You know, it may as well have said, see a magical kingdom, as far as I was concerned. I had to see those places. And eventually, I pestered my parents into stopping one time, and we did see Ruby Falls. And, you know, at the time, through a child's eyes, I didn't know that those were colored lights being flashed on the waterfall. I thought it was just a magically colored waterfall. So I was fascinated. And it may have just been a childhood fascination. But then when I grew up and went to college at Florida State, I learned that northern Florida and southern Georgia and Alabama had lots of caves to explore, and there was a caving club on campus. And so remembering that childhood experience and other tour caves we had visited on vacations, I joined the cave club, and I was 19 then, and that was over 40 years ago, and I'm still hooked.
And the title of this book, Hidden Nature, there are a lot of ways that you can read that title. One is the obvious. This is all about the experience underground in caves.
Right. Caves are connected to all of nature, and you don't realize that at first. But for example, in a state like Tennessee, if you're drinking water, it's traveled through a cave. Caves are the conduit between the surface streams and the water table. And just as the streams and rivers hold an abundance of nature, that water underground holds an abundance of nature. It's not obvious at first. You know, it's tiny little fish and salamanders and things you don't notice. And the caves themselves, their formation, their unusual mineralogy, it's all an experience of nature such as a naturalist on the surface would enjoy. And I think there's also, as you intuit, a kind of unusual nature of those who spend all their free time underground exploring these caves. And so I'm showing the nature of the cavers as well as the nature of the caves.
And the nature of the cavers can be as complex as the caves that they are exploring.
They can. Caving is kind of a self-destructive pursuit, because the moment you discover a new cave, it is in a truly virgin state. No human has left a footprint there. But as soon as you cross a room for the first time, you've left that footprint. And the history of cave exploration is also a history of damage to the caves. Sometimes, you know, accidentally, you casually brush a formation as you pass, and it's delicate, and it's been there for 20,000 years, but it shatters and falls to the ground. Other times, it's intentional vandalism, and caves develop over a very slow time scale. So on the surface, if someone spray paints a rock, in a couple of hundred years, nature will remove that spray paint if nobody else does. But in caves, as we know from examples of ancient archaeology, art on the wall stays there, whether it's just someone's name and go tigers or whatever it happens to be, will stay there for centuries upon centuries.
And when we talk about hidden nature, we talk about human nature. That also includes mortality.
It's a dangerous activity. Now, there are plenty of very safe caves out there. Tourist caves, for example, are safe, and many wild caves that are short and easily explored in an hour or two and are great for novices. But there are also, and especially in the South, caves with such dangers as very deep vertical pits, sometimes hundreds of feet deep, loose rock that can fall and break legs, caves that are prone to flood in times of heavy rain. And even if you escape the water, like the boys in Thailand, you could be trapped in a back room for days or weeks. And so, you know, one reason cavers tend to be very closed-mouthed about cave locations, especially the big, impressive caves, is they don't want people getting hurt. And the only way to really assess whether someone is prepared in terms of knowing the proper techniques, if rope work is required or having the proper gear to stay relatively safe, the only way to do that is to meet them in person. And if you share cave locations, then there's going to be people you don't know and quite possibly unprepared people. And what happens if someone gets hurt is that a rescue is called out. It quickly becomes a big news story. And if the cave is on private property, the landowner will typically say, well, okay, we're going to close this because it's too dangerous. I shouldn't be letting people in here. And even if the landowner doesn't want to close it, their insurance company will tell them you better close it. So that makes cavers very secretive and kind of insular. Yet at the same time, they're constantly working to preserve this wonderful nature. And so they do have to share publicly information about the caves, photographs, new discoveries, and all of the clubs, of which there are many in Tennessee, will welcome interested novices into their club and take them on trips. But they're not just going to, with a phone call, share where their secret places are located.
As for the public caves, that gets at another aspect of human nature and hidden nature, and that is the commercialization of caves, which you saw from the time of a child.
Right. And I will say that since I've grown up, commercial caves have done doing a much better job in not only giving tourists an interesting thing to look at, but giving them some education about the unique nature of the cave. One cave that's often worked hand in hand with cavers, not only in preparing some aspects of their tours, but in opening up the cave to wild exploration by cavers of the extreme depths and tourists who come by, is Cumberland Caverns right here in Middle Tennessee. It's a good example of how you can create something that's a tourist attraction, but it can also be educational in the manner of a state park or national park. And I should mention also, there are many state parks, especially in Tennessee, with fine caves and tour caves and opportunities for wild caving, often by permit and often by season, I should add, but still chances to get underground and see some unexplored places.
And you've touched on this before, but I want to mention this phrase now, coined by you, Spelian biology.
Well, Spelian biology, actually, I didn't coin the phrase, and I didn't coin the phrase cave microbiology, but there are things I've become fascinated with. I did coin a phrase with a previous book I called Dark Life, because in the same way that dark matter, we now think from physicists, makes up much of our universe, dark life are these extreme microorganisms that live deep underground. And if you put them all on a scale, they would weigh more than the mass of all the life on the surface, all the life in the oceans. So much of the life of Earth is this unseen deep biosphere, and caves offer a window to it. First started becoming known to scientists in the 1970s and 80s from the black smokers in the deep ocean, and also sometimes from volcanoes and from glaciers. But cavers have found that these unusual organisms, they don't need sunlight to survive. They do need water, and they get their energy from minerals, from transforming the rocks into things they can eat, basically. And I've worked with biologists to find some of these in many caves, including in Tennessee, and a couple of chapters in the book are devoted to this one magnificent cave that's 15 miles long, and still cavers are finding new passages in it. It's on private land. It's not open to the public, but one small section has these unusual organisms. And I sampled some and took them back to Arkansas, where a biologist colleague of mine and his students have shown that the closest living relatives of six of the microorganisms we found are in the black smokers in the middle of the ocean. And one has never been found anywhere except in the deep Pacific off the coast of Japan. So the question is, what's a little bug from the deep Pacific off the coast of Japan doing in a cave in Tennessee? And I think that answer says a lot about the nature of the hidden life beneath the Earth's surface.
What's something that you learned during the course of this book?
I learned that, as I say, since I was a teenager, even before I was a teenager, I was fascinated with caves. And cavers were the friends I met along the way. But I learned that, like many outdoor pursuits, if you spend much of your life doing it, you discover that those you meet along the way are more than just people to go out and have fun underground with. They sort of become part of your family. There are relationships that are forged among the caving community, in part because cavers are so weird. We're just drawn to hang out with each other. But I write especially of a good friend of mine, Lee Pearson, who I spent a lot of time caving with from the very beginning and still go caving with, and also one of the senior figures of the caving world, not only here in the South, but I would have to say worldwide, a fellow named Marion Smith. He's crotchety and cantankerous in his late 70s, but he's been that way for as long as I've known him, probably since he was a teenager himself. And yet he has been in well over 8,000 caves in his lifetime. He's descended virtually every known pit in the South multiple times in many cases. And he sort of epitomizes this single-minded drive to explore. And that's what draws me to these people and has changed my life. And in this book, now that I've been doing it for over 40 years, I'm reflecting on each cave now looks about like it did when I went in when I was 19. I don't look that way anymore. There are certain crawlways I can no longer fit into. Caves live on a much longer time scale than humans do. And so when your life has been affected by them, it's good to sit back and reflect on how has it affected me. I wrote the book as a memoir, but I also wrote it as a celebration of cavers and some of the great discoveries in southern caves, including very recent ones.
Beyond the reflections in this book, what's next?
Well, several things. I mean, there's always new discoveries, new things to write about. I'm also following some environmental battles that are currently going on in Coffee County, for example. There's a proposed zoning change that would allow for new quarries throughout the county. And these quarries, by removing limestone, would also remove the caves that lie within the limestone. And so I'm trying to help cavers out by writing about some of that battle. But what I'm working on mostly right now is a documentary film about bats and white nose syndrome, which I write about in the book. It's a disease that's devastated America's bats over the last 15 years or so. But it also teaches us a lot about how a species can be hit hard by a pandemic and come back from it, as American bats are doing now. And so I've been interviewing a lot of scientists and following their research in caves. And I'm hoping to have that film done sometime in the next year and then go back to writing possibly some fiction about caves, but certainly some more nonfiction about caves.
And if people want to follow you online, where can they go?
They can go to my website, michaelraytaylor.com. And I've been doing, like every writer with a book in the fall of 2020, I've been doing a lot of Zoom talks and presentations, and I try to keep the website updated with those. I've got some past videos recorded on the website. You can find links to some of the journalism I've written in other places about caves and cave discovery, as well as a few other things that I find interesting.
All right, Michael, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
EPB's Holiday Windows will be revealed tomorrow evening here in Chattanooga. People can visit the windows virtually or in person until January 4th on the Broad and Market Street sides of EPB's headquarters at 10 West Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Scotty Summerlin and Lauren Obermark are with EPB.
Scotty, Lauren, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ray. We're so glad to be here today.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Holiday Windows. The theme this year is about community, with an emphasis on unity and featuring the North Pole, even more important given the year that we have had.
Absolutely, Ray. This is a tradition at EPB that we have had since the 1930s. And this year, we're giving it a little Gig City spin. So this Wednesday, November 25th, Thanksgiving Eve at 5 p.m., people can join us at epb.com/holiday2020. and they can be the first to see the windows reveal. We're going to have a live show that's going to air on our website, on our Facebook page, and our YouTube, where folks can see the windows there. And then they are welcome to visit virtually or in person anytime between Thanksgiving Day and January the 4th. EPB is located at the corner of Market and MLK in downtown Chattanooga, and there's public parking on the street, or they can park in our EPB garage.
If you do come in person, of course, social distancing will be in place.
Of course, and the masks and all of that. But, you know, it's really exciting this year because a lot of people who haven't been able to see the windows in the past can do it virtually from the comfort and safety of their own home anytime between Thanksgiving Eve and January 4th. And folks can also come downtown and bring their families and wear their masks and social distance and see them in person. So we've got two options this year that we're really excited about.
60 employees have been working their day jobs, then volunteering to work nights and weekends on the windows. Lauren, that brings us to you.
We have an excellent group of volunteers who, like I said, they work their day jobs, then they shift into elf mode at night and on the weekends to help construct and build our display.
You also are getting help from STEM school students here in Chattanooga.
Absolutely. So we've had a partnership with the STEM school for the past several years, and it looked a little bit different this year. Traditionally, the students, not only do they work on some projects during their class time where they actually use different machinery to fabricate different pieces for us, but historically, they've come and worked side by side with us in our warehouse on the build. Unfortunately, this year they weren't able to join us due to the pandemic, but they still were able to work during their traditional class time and still participate with us. We had several Zoom meetings with them where we brainstormed different ideas to come up with different props that we used in the display, and we are very much hoping that we can resume our normal schedule in the future.
And Ray, when we do the live show on Wednesday, we're going to be talking to some of the STEM school students and educators, and I'm sure you've been over there, but they have got a STEM fab lab with 3D printers and all kinds of cool technology, and that's what they're using to do the window display. We're also going to talk to our mayors, and we're going to have live local music from the Tivoli Theater on our reveal show. So you'll have to tell Richard Winham, because I know he loves that. So.
We will. You also will have special exhibits for McCamey and the Tennessee Aquarium. Tell us more about those.
Animals are near and dear to my heart, so I'm very excited about this partnership. But we'll be featuring some adoptable animals in one of our windows so folks can look and see the different animals that are looking for their forever home. Additionally, we'll have some footage from the aquarium, too, featuring some penguins and some other exciting animals over there. And for folks who will be visiting the aquarium this year during the holiday season, they might see a little bit of a surprise in their lobby.
Where can people go online for more information and, again, to follow it online if they're unable to see the windows in person?
Just go to epb.com/holiday2020 this Wednesday at 5 o'clock, Thanksgiving Eve, Wednesday, November 25th, for the live reveal. We're also going to have it on our EPB Facebook page and our EPB YouTube page. And then folks can come down anytime between Thanksgiving and January the 4th and see them in person at our downtown building, which is at the corner of Market and MLK.
All right. Scotty, Lauren, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ray. Have a great day.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Roots from the Wednesday Night Jazz Facebook page. This is the redoubtable David Schwab playing bass, with Stephen Powers playing guitar, live in Barking Legs and online on the Wednesday Night Jazz Facebook page.
Thank you. Thank you. let's see if you can do it. Can you do it? Are you a musician or not? So he's pretty entertaining. Fantastic player. All right.
Thank you. Beatrice by Sam Rivers.
That's right. I always think it's Sam Jones, but it's not. I'm sure we can.
Sound good?
Mm-hmm. Who thought a drummer could write a tune?
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
That good?
Yeah.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
David Schwab playing bass, Stephen Powers on guitar, In Barking Legs for the Wednesday Night Jazz Session, streamed on the Wednesday Night Jazz Sessions Facebook page every Wednesday evening starting at 7, and here on Scenic Roots every Tuesday afternoon on listener-supported public radio.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.